I wasn't going to bring this up today, but it broke right before showtime today, and somebody who I have close ties to, I remember when she was hired to rejuvenate the Tennessee State women's basketball team, and she certainly was able to do that. Appearances in the NCAA tournament as well. But Teresa Phillips announcing today that she's retiring effective June of next year. And you start looking back to her career first as a coach and then later as an administrator as well. You know, she has a long, long list there on her resume of her accomplishments and, you know, heavily involved too on committees with regards to the NCAA as well. But, you know, she's certainly left her footprint there with the TSU athletics program.
Yeah, just a true class act, Teresa is, always has been, has one of the toughest jobs in the country. There's no doubt about that. And to have held that job as long as she has, you go back to her basketball years, but, you know, she's been the AD since 2002, making her the Dean of Athletics Directors in the state by a few years. I think Chris Massaro at MTSU and at Tech, Mark Wilson came around 05 or 06, but she's by far the longest tenured athletics director, and man, she's been through some tough times and held her head high and been able to keep TSU relevant. They're struggling now basically in every sport, every major sport, but she's done a good job, and congratulations to her, and now she'll be able to follow her son Kyle, former Hillsboro star and UT star, who is down in the NFL and playing well for the New York Jets. She'll be able to devote a little bit more time to going to his games and following his career.
I was joking with her. I said, you know, I could have been right there with you along the way. But, you know, if you had decided to go for the AD job 3 years prior to when she did, because the person that they went with, to me, started that and actually put – because. I remember in 99 when TSU first played in now what we know as Nissan Stadium, but in 99, we had 10,000 season tickets sold for that first issue. I mean, we had two crowds, and not a Vanderbilt estimate. We had two crowds of 40,000 plus for the John Merritt, and then you look at homecoming. I mean, but, you know, the athletics director then, Dr. Jim Smith, you know, certainly help dig a hole that, you know, look, it's tough. You know, you look at TSU, MTSU, Belmont, Lipscomb, you got to do it better now when you start thinking about the Titans and now the Predators here as well. When you look at both of these organizations here, you're fighting for attention and the media. You're also fighting for dollars that, you know, when you have folks. I mean, back then it was just an entirely different landscape in the 90s compared to what it is today. And look, the bottom line is you got to work harder and do a better job than you ever have before.
Yeah, they're up against it. I mean, you know, back then there was no Power Five. You had Vanderbilt in town, but you had a whole different audience that didn't want to, you know, put up with the parking of an SEC game. Of course, that's not much of an issue. I guess it is still an issue these days.
For the opposing teams, yeah.
But it is a different landscape. The Titans were new and hadn't really taken hold at that time. They'd been to the Super Bowl the year before, so they were starting to gain the momentum. Preds were still trying to find their identity. And, you know, you had a niche back then, TSU did, and it had a strong tradition in basketball, obviously in football, but you know, that's been 20 years ago. It's been a long time since Tennessee State was relevant in any sport other than a couple of flashes in men's basketball and then 1 year in women's basketball. So you've got to do a lot. Like you said, you got to kind of be a Belmont and get in the NCAA tournament a couple of times or a Lipscomb and go to the NIT championship game to make a little bit of a splash just to stay on the radar.
I saw the stat talking about Tennessee State ties right now currently as far as the football program with the longest losing streak in school history, and I sent you a text about that the last two times that it occurred The coaches at the end of the year were relieved of their duties. Lawrence Simmons in 62. That's when it started the era with John Merritt in 63. And then the last time it happened, Bill Davis in 95. And that started the L.C. Cole era in 96. Where do we stand right now looking at the football program?
Well, you know, we reported at the end of last season that Teresa Phillips did not extend Rod Reed's contract. So he's working without in the last year of a contract right now, which, you know, is an indication that he was on the hot seat coming in. He knew that. Everybody knew that coming into the season. And they're 1-6 right now with a game that could be end up having to be forfeited because they played an ineligible player in it by their own admission. So, you know, they may have already matched that losing streak depending on what the NCAA rules there. So, you know, we're in a flux right now. And now this development today creates a whole new dynamic with Teresa Phillips announces she'll step down. Now she'll still be in the office, in the chair, and in position and power until June 30th. But, you know, we'll just see how much the president, Glover, gives her as far as making a decision at the end of the season. And I don't think they would do anything before then. It wouldn't serve any purpose to. But for Rod Reed's future, I guess it could still be in Teresa Phillips' hands. So, I mean, it's definitely a hot seat issue. And like I said, it's no news to anybody, no news to Rod, no news to the coaching staff, no news to any fans. So, but it does create a little bit of a different dynamic with her making this announcement today.
You know, look, we see a lot of FCS teams where they have to take the big paycheck and go and play a FBS team, for example, and for years and years and years. And before, I mean, now, obviously, when you're talking about getting several $100,000 paycheck. But for many years there, Tennessee State never had to go that direction, and mainly because of the classics that they would play mm-hmm. in some years, three or so in a season. I remember, obviously, Memphis, the Southern Heritage Classic, is on the schedule. And there were years where we would do that one. There would be one in Atlanta, and then also one in Indianapolis, for example. And the best part about that is that you're not playing in front of a huge crowd of the opposing team's fans. You're paying, you know, half the crowd are fans of your particular program. And when I say crowd, and when I say crowds, I'm talking about 40,000, 50,000, 60,000 fans attending these games.
If they could ever get the tailgaters to all the tailgaters outside the stadium to come in, you might be talking about 50,000, 60,000, 70,000. So, that's another issue. But another good thing about that, Johnny, that, TSU kind of had an edge on was you were playing the team of your caliber. You weren't having to step up and take a beating and get players hurt and have no chance. For a paycheck. You were getting a paycheck and possibly very good chance that you were picking up a win. But for whatever reason, the classics have kind of gone away. The only classic that Tennessee State plays in now consistently is the Southern Heritage in Memphis, which does well, still gets about 40,000 to 60,000 in the
And Fred Jones has always done an outstanding job from the, you know, I was a part of the first 10 years of those, and, you know, he not just the game itself, but all the other events leading up to it.
Amazing what one man has been able to do. Really a testimony to what one person can do when they set their mind to it and remain committed. And you're right, he has kept that thing going and is as strong as ever. But the bad thing for TSU is that's the only classic that they're still in. So the last couple of years, they've had to step up and play, you know, FBS opponent. And this year was MTSU, which is, you know, that's at least there's some history there, and it's there's some intrigue and some interest.
Well, they're winnable games, too. I mean, look at last year with Vanderbilt. You know, Tennessee State driving with a chance to beat Vanderbilt last year.
Well, look at Tennessee State's last three FCS, FBS opponents. Beat Georgia State,
right?
Which, if I recall, lost to Tennessee. Beat Tennessee this year.
Yeah, did beat
Georgia
Tennessee.
State 2 years ago.
I see where you like throwing a dig there to the Tennessee Vol fans that are listening. I see where you are with that.
I'm not a Tennessee Vols expert, but I was thinking that they lost to them this year. I might have to go back and check the record.
Oh, I just thought you were just being. Yeah, I know how you operate. Don't worry.
And then they nearly beat Vanderbilt. It was on the way.
See,
to beat
that's
Vanderbilt.
Why Joe Dubin doesn't like you, Mike Organ. I'm just going to throw that out there. It's just that's why
I do it. Whatever you tell me that Joe Dubin doesn't like, then I'll do.
Oh, okay.
Anytime you get a clue, then you let me know. And thank you for having Justin Beasley on at the bottom of the hour instead of following me with Joe Dubin. I heard you promoting that, and I thought, you know, that's so much better than having to.
Joe and I look at Justin like our little brother, honestly. It's like we're so proud of him. All right, speaking of Vanderbilt.
The FBS issue, they would have they were on their way to beating Vanderbilt, and then they lost their best defensive player and
right.
still only at halftime, and this still only lost by 4 points, and then had a great shot at NTSU this year and just kind of ran out of steam at the end, which often happens when you've got an FCS opponent going against an FBS and depth starts taking an issue. But, yeah, they've done well, and they picked up that paycheck. So, but it's still hard to make up when you had those three classics. Think of the money they were getting for three games instead of just one game.
Quite aware of it. And you go back to Fred Jones, and I think that I don't care if you're putting on a classic or just your normal college football game. Everybody can learn lessons the way Fred Jones does it over in Memphis. I mean, here's a guy, you know it's smart to take care of, like, the presidents and the athletic teams and the bands and all that. He makes sure that those individuals, that they're behind the scenes, are fully appreciated. And it's those little things that he does is the reason why that is still going so strong all these years later.
Yeah, his is a model that should be followed and should be taught in colleges, universities across the country, because what he's been able to do, and what we're sitting here talking about, how the other classics have kind of faded and gone away, and his is still strong, and how he's been able to do it is something that needs to be taught in economics classes and business classes and marketing and in a lot of different ways.
All right, can I just throw this out here? Because here's the thing, and I'm not going to charge Vanderbilt for this idea, but this is just a perfect example from a marketing 101 standpoint with Vanderbilt. We're talking about classics, and this is what a lot of the, you know, whether you're talking about Florida A&M, Tennessee State, Jackson State, Grambling, whatever the case may be, there's no reason in the world why Vanderbilt, you can call it whatever you want. You can call it classic, but let that be the working model. But every year, have a game like that with a big buildup leading up to the game, but have your opponent being a team like Northwestern, Duke, Stanford. You see where I'm going there? There's no reason why you can't do that and make it extra exciting, not just about the football game itself, but what the two institutions mean, especially those that stress academics as well. Why can't you do something simple like that? Instead of trying to, but instead, here's the thing, just like with the football team, you're trying to beat Alabama, LSU, Georgia, you know, whatever, Florida, by doing what they do. And you're not going to get the same kind of talent to beat those kind of teams on a consistent basis. So you got to do it differently than the other 13 teams in the SEC. But and the same thing applies to, you can't just say, well, the game's at 11 a.m., why aren't you showing up? That's not going to work. You have to get out there. Look how many people keep moving to this area. And I go back 20 years ago, Vanderbilt actually had Vanderbilt fans in the stadium. 20 years ago, they did. The landscape has changed. You have all these new faces here and new folks here. They're college football fans, but they have opportunities to do other things with their money. The bottom line is you have to go out and extend. You can't just, you know, welcome in. Because remember, too, Mike, and you remember this as well, there was a period of time when the sidewalk fan of Vanderbilt sports was not welcomed. And when I say welcomed, you didn't feel appreciated when you showed up. If you didn't have a degree from Vanderbilt,
that is an interesting dynamic. I mean, those of us who grew up around here and have been around here forever remember when it seemed like there was literally one sidewalk fan, and that was Vandy Lance Smith. He was the only person you could identify as a sidewalk fan, the only one that was willing to go where most people felt like they were unwelcome. And you're right, that dynamic has changed, and now they have no sidewalk fans, and now they wish they could get them back. And you bring up the play in the Dukes and the Northwesterns, and maybe the Virginias, the truly academic schools across the country. That's something that I always found. I covered Vanderbilt as the beat writer for about 10 years in the 90s and early 2000s. And every time a Northwestern or a Stanford or a Duke would have success, somewhere where they had not had success before, Vanderbilt would form a committee and send that committee in the off season to that school to study what they did. So, you know, this is something that they've always had interest in, and while they've never had interest in putting together a series, like you mentioned, with one of these teams, which would be a little bit more evenly matched and have some intrigue to it, they've not done that. They've just wanted to go copycat, and, you know, they'll come back with some model that they'll put in place, and it won't work, and then they'll just end up chasing the next team that has a little bit of success. But yeah, I mean, wouldn't you rather watch and see them play a team like that than a UNLV or Northwest or Northern Illinois?
I mean, yeah, I mean, based on the lack of folks inside the building last Saturday, I think the answer to that would be yes, because not only were they not watching inside the stadium, you look at the TV ratings, they weren't watching at home either.
The Vanderbilt games, I publish the TV ratings in my column every week. Don't think a Vanderbilt game has cracked the top 15 in sports events in Nashville this year. Hadn't been more than about a 2 or 3 point rating, which is about 20,000 households. I mean, it's incredible how irrelevant and how little interest there is in the program. But if I'm over there right now, I don't want a whole lot of interest in the program that I think it has. Is it five combined wins this year amongst women's basketball, men's basketball, and football?
Yeah, that was an ugly stat that Adam Sparks sent out on Twitter this week.
Yeah, Sparks is always trying to stir something up, and I don't know why he went there, but he did. And since he did, let's talk about it.
Yeah, see, I was.
It is at Pella. It is incredible.
See, I was always smart. See, I was. Here's the thing, and I in so many ways you can point fingers at the media relations department, because I covered and I had to represent some bad teams at times over at Tennessee State. Right, I had a lot of success too in some years as far as men's and women's basketball, and some up years as far as back in '99, for example, going to the playoffs, Tennessee State, the number one seed as far as the old 1AA. And so I bring it up because in those lean years, you got to throw out so many interesting, bizarre, good stats, they forget about that ugly one that Adam sent out as far as on Twitter this week. If you have to allow the Adam Sparks of the world to create their own, that's never a good thing. So I came up.
Because they're going to, you're right, they're going to do it. So you might as well try to hit them off at the pass. And you're right. And Jim Wyatt with the Titans is very good at that. When things will get bad going for the Titans, he'll come up with something interesting that will deflect your interest a little bit.
Well, I'd give you a good example. When Butch Jones was still head coach at Tennessee, when he was still lobbying to have statues built outside Neyland Stadium in his honor, tongue in cheek there. If you saw the game notes, it was these, you know, the kind of game notes that I would have put together, in the sense that, you know, basically making him the same breath as a Nick Saban per se, when the reality was, if you see through what they were trying to do, it's just like, oh wait, stop. I see what you're doing there, and I'm not buying it. I'm not going to be fed that. But you know how many folks didn't pay attention? Most of them, because I thought he should have been gone in year two, that you could just tell he was leading this team to nowhere fast, and yet it took a few more years before they realized that.
Yep, that's exactly right. And you're right, he was kind of a spin doctor, and that's what you kind of got to be to survive. That you'll get an extra year or two by doing things like that.
Oh, I love the one. It was either his last year or the next to last year. It could have been his last year. Talking about how he had such a young team, and he had more upperclassmen on his team than Alabama did and Georgia. But, you know, as long as it's a good story, you know, if no one's going to do fact-checking to correct it, you know, if they just say, well, young team, you just take it for granted. A young team is what Ole Miss is doing this year, when 83% of their offense is being generated from true freshmen. That's a young team. What Butch Jones had at Tennessee, at the end especially, stop with that nonsense.
Well, and Butch was so good about, in the one breath, they're talking about the great recruiting class they had coming in, and how, you know, it's the best recruiting class, amongst the best recruiting classes in the country. And then in the next breath, he's talking about how young they are. Well, if they're all so good, shouldn't they be playing? I mean, come on.
Well, the problem is, you as a head coach, as a successful head coach, I go back to a conversation Mal Moore was having with Nick Saban as he was being, on the plane coming from South Florida to be introduced as the new head coach for Alabama. And the conversation was the fact that, you know, you know, Saban was talking to Mal Moore, you know, like, you know, you have a good head coach, but I don't know how much you know that you have a good recruiter. And the bottom line is you could do one well, but if you can't do the other, and being a good coach means also being able to coach up players once they arrive. That was the biggest thing. And how about evaluating your players too? I mean, look for Alvin Kamara, perfect example of an underutilized player in Knoxville. I think he's doing pretty good in the NFL.
Yeah, the big indictment on Jones was that they were so great coming in, and then they all ended up in the NFL. But they had this dark spot, this blotch on their resume, and that was their time spent at the University of Tennessee. And you just wondered what happened there. But, yeah, they came in highly touted, and then they still made it to the NFL and then made it big in the NFL. So many players did.
Marcus Mariota, yeah, I have no problem with the benching, with Ryan Tannehill getting the start on Sunday, but to me it's just the start of other questions that need to be asked about this organization, because this team was supposed to be going to greatness from good. This team has digressed over the last 2 years under Mike Vrabel and this staff. And when you use excuses, like, for example, when you're trying to defend your offensive line coach by saying, well, the players know where they know their blocking assignments, they know who they need to block, they're just not doing it. And when you're throwing your players under the bus and not allowing everybody to be accountable, including assistant coaches, then maybe I need to start directing my attention towards the coaching staff as well, starting with the head coach and Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head. I mean, yes, Mariota didn't give them any choice to bench him last week, but at the same time, when Tannehill came in, he also was sacked. He also was under great pressure, and there's no reason to believe he won't be this week. I mean, maybe he learned watching on the sidelines to release the ball quicker than Mariota did, but there were games where Mariota did not hold the ball. He didn't get turned around before the half the defensive line was on top of him, so they haven't fix the problem. They may have, you know, tapped in on one symptom, but the big issue is still there. And I think that's what we're going to find out, even with Tannehill stepping in, is until they fix the offensive line and aren't able to run the ball consistently well or throw the ball consistently well and have just a horrid offense, then their issues are going to remain.